The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter Number 24, Text Number 15, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasatkikari, recorded on July 6th, 2010, in Sydney, Australia.
So, today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter Number 24, Text Number 15. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yad uktam pati drishtena,
yad uktam pati drishtena,
girishena prasidata,
girishena prasidata,
tadhyayanto japantascha,
tadhyayanto japantascha,
pujiyantascha sanyata,
yad uktam pati drishtena,
girishena prasidata, tadhyayanto japantascha, pujayantascha sanyata. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. When all the sons of Prachinibarhi left home to execute austerities, they met Lord Shiva, who out of great mercy instructed them about the absolute truth. All the sons of Prachinibarhi meditated upon the instructions, chanting and worshipping them with great care and attention. Purport. It is clear that to perform austerities or penances, or for that matter any form of devotional service, one has to be guided by a spiritual master. Here it is clearly stated that the 10 sons of Maharaj Prachinibarhi were favored by the appearance of Lord Shiva, who out of great kindness gave them instructions regarding the execution of austerities. Lord Shiva actually became the spiritual master of the 10 sons, and in turn his disciples took his words so seriously that simply by meditating upon his instructions, jayanta, they became perfect. This is the secret of success. After being initiated and receiving the orders of the spiritual master, the disciple should unhesitatingly think about the instructions or orders of the spiritual master and should not allow himself to be disturbed by anything else. This is also the verdict of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, who, while explaining a verse of Bhagavad Gita, Javyasayatmaka Abudhir Ekeha Kuru Nandana, Bhagavad Gita 241, points out that the order of the spiritual master is the life substance of the disciple. The disciple should not consider whether he is going back home, back to Godhead. His first business should be to execute the order of his spiritual master. Thus, a disciple should always meditate on the order of the spiritual master, and that is perfectional meditation. Not only should he meditate upon that order, but he should find out the means by which he can perfectly worship and execute it. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam
sagrajatam sagana ragunatanvitam tam sajiva sadaita Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakonvitamscha.
So everybody's looking for the easy formula. Here it is. It's a very simple thing. It is not difficult. You simply have to accept the order of the spiritual master as your very life and soul. It's interesting to note here, this is not, it's more important than going back to Godhead. In other words, the disciple is willing to stay eternally in this material world. If that's what his spiritual master wants him to do. Actually, his only desire is to serve his spiritual master, Jordan. Even the thought of going back to God, it doesn't disturb him. You think, well, it doesn't matter, whatever. I can stay here, birth after birth, and preach, or I can go back, whatever Guru Maharaj wants, whatever he wants me to do. So, in that state of consciousness, he's already as good as back to God. When one accepts the spiritual master's order like this, as described, the spiritual master dwells within his heart. He enters into the heart of such a disciple. He constantly blesses, guides, and inspires and sees that disciple's activities. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, he's never separated from his spiritual master. So this is called Pani Seva. When the Vapu, or the physical presence of the spiritual master, is there, everyone runs to serve that form, but this is more subtle. When Prabhupada was here, there were so many disciples fighting to serve him. I want to serve him. No, let me serve him. Competing, who will serve Prabhupada? But then after he leaves the planet, so many have left, you see, because they did not fully understand this principle. To connect with the spiritual master through the orders that he has given. You see. If you can connect with your spiritual master on this level, Vani Seva, then you will never be separated. Not in all of eternal existence will you ever be separated from your spiritual master for even 1 second. So there's no purport more important than this purport anywhere in Prabhupada's books. No purport more important than this purport. As Prabhupada says, this is the secret of success. So do you want to be successful in spiritual life? Or do you want to be a failure? Success or failure, what do you want? Success? And then you must follow this principle. You must take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. You must take initiation from a bona fide spiritual master. And that's only the beginning. That's not the end. Well, I'm initiated, I'm saved. Well, that's Christianity. Sorry, that doesn't work. I accepted Jesus and now I'm saved. I can do whatever I want. And I'm going to heaven. My father told me that. I can do whatever I want because I accepted. That don't take initiation cheaply. Well, I have my diksha, so I'm saved. No. Initiation means now you're enrolled in the university.
Does enrolling in the university guarantee you will graduate from the university? No. You have to work hard. You have to do your homework. You have to attend the classes. You have to write the papers. You have to sit for the exams. You have to go to the laboratory. You have to do everything required to get your degree. Initiation simply means now you're a registered student. Now that you're a registered student, now you must do your duty. And by that duty is given you. It's very clearly described. Whatever instructions the spiritual master gives you, those are your life and soul. Sometimes people say, well, in ISKCON it's a little different because the GBC is the ultimate authority and the guru is under the GBC, so the guru isn't really the ultimate authority. That's not true. Spiritual master is the ultimate authority. But because he is bona fide spiritual master, his order is, you must follow the GBC. You see? It's like when Prabhupada was here, he said, you must follow the GBC. Does that mean Prabhupada is no longer our guru because we're under the GBC's authority, under the Temple Presence's authority? Does that mean Prabhupada's? No. Prabhupada ordered, now you follow the order of your Temple President. You follow your GBC. You see. So it's true, the GBC is the ultimate authority in our society. But for the disciple, the ultimate authority is his spiritual master. That's a fact. The final, ultimate authority is his spiritual master. And as I said, I'll repeat it again, if his spiritual master is bona fide, he will instruct his disciple that you should follow the GBC. Why? Because Prabhupada gave that order that we should follow the GBC. You cannot change the instruction coming from the predecessor Acharya, you see. The bona fide spiritual master, he simply repeats and passes on to the disciples the bona fide orders which are coming in disciplic succession. But there's no doubt the ultimate authority is the spiritual master. It's clearly stated here. How we can say, no, well, this, the guru is not important. It's just the temple president and the GBC. We have to follow them, but we don't have to follow the spiritual master. It's completely negated by this. You see, this totally defeats such a non-bona fide philosophy. The spiritual master is the ultimate authority, and one must take those instructions one receives from him as one's very life and soul. One must do them. It's very clear. So, are there any questions? Yes.
I don't understand one bit here. In our Gita, we always say, Krishna always says, this is my opinion to Arjuna. He instructs, but he says, this is my opinion. You do what you feel like doing.
I couldn't hear a word of it. What is he saying?
He says that in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's instruction says, this is my opinion, but he doesn't say the other way, but he just says it.
He says, it's my opinion, but...
But he does not say that this is it.
Oh, okay. Now let me ask you this. You have a Supreme Court here in Australia, right? Now when the Supreme Court gives its opinion, is that law? Is it final? Do they call it, in the U.S., I don't know what you call it in Australia, but in the U.S., the Supreme Court will sit and decide on some legal issue, and then the Supreme Court issues its official opinion. And that opinion becomes law. So if the Supreme Court's opinion is law, why Krishna's opinion wouldn't be law? You understand? Now when Krishna, if I give my opinion, you give your opinion, that is not law, you see. But when Krishna gives his opinion, that is law. That's the difference. Don't bring Krishna down to your level. You see what I'm saying? That when I give opinion, it is not law. Well, that's for you and me. Well, our opinions are not law. But when Krishna gives opinion, that is law.
What you were saying?
Now, what I was saying is...
Did I miss the point you're asking?
That's fine.
Okay.
I understood the point, but my doubt is, when Krishna says, you know, Krishna doesn't tell Arjuna that, okay, you do this.
He's not giving that you must do this, but he gives his opinion on the end. He's not saying, yeah, you have to do this.
Now, wait a minute. That's not true. Krishna clearly says, give up sarva-dharman parijaja mamikam sharanam raja hang vang sarva-papebhyo mokshiyasami maashushaha. That's a direct order. You give up all varieties of pseudo-religion, pseudo-duties, and just surrender to me. That's a direct order. But then after he's given all the orders, he says, well, if you don't really want to take these orders, that's your business, at your risk. But he's definitely giving orders. The whole Bhagavad Gita, he's giving orders. How many orders he's giving? Manmanava vabad bhakto majadji mang namaskaru mamme vashashi yukvayavang atmanam matparayanaha. Engage your mind always in thinking of me, offer obeisances and worship me, being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. He's giving one order after another order after another order. But the final end, he says, but if you want to do something different, that's your business at your own risk. The orders are given. Even in the military, you know, you have to obey the orders. And if you don't obey them, you could always disobey them. And then what do they do? They'll put you in the military prison. The orders are there, and you have to follow them. But if you wanted to, you could say, "Well, I'm not going to follow them." They put you in the prison, military prison. It's like them. Does that satisfy your intelligence? Okay, very good. Thank you for that question. I appreciate it very much. Anyone else have a question? Yes.
Spiritual master will give sometimes general instruction.
Yes.
And he won't give us a specific instruction unless we ask him. So is that we need to ask for the instruction? Or?
Well, he may give specific instructions even without being asked also. You know that. Now, it's certainly proper if you would like some specific instructions to ask him for those. Prabhupada did that. You remember that? In that letter he wrote in right before Guru Maharaj left the planet, he said, "My dear Guru Maharaj, do you have any specific orders for me?" He gave him the same order he had given in 1922 when he met in Uttadanga, Calcutta. Spread this Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world. So you can always ask, you're always welcome to ask your spiritual master for specific orders. But the general orders are also specific. Just like Srila Prabhupada gave a general order to his disciples, he said, "Become guru and deliver the world." Does that mean it doesn't apply to me because the general order for his disciples? It means, oh, I don't have to do that one because it was a general order. It's not specific. Does it mean that? No, of course not. Prabhupada, he ordered his disciples, now you become guru and deliver the world. So that's just as specific. A general order is just as personal as a specific personal order, actually. It is. There's really no difference. There's no difference. So that is just as the responsibility I have to meditate upon and execute that order to the best of my ability is just as real as if Prabhupada had specifically given that instruction to me personally. Because he did give it to me personally. I'm one of his disciples. He gave that instruction to his disciples. So that's just as personal as if he wrote me a letter. "Dear Sankarshanda." Just a little aside, a little nectar here. Those letters we used to get from Prabhupada, they were so special. Do you know how he would address the outside of the envelope? I don't know if you know this, but when you would get a letter from Prabhupada, I was a brahmachari then, so this is how the outside of the letter would read. It would be addressed to His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Brahmachari. That's how Prabhupada addressed his disciples when he write them a letter. He gives them a long title, His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Brahmachari. Prabhupada
was so sweet and so wonderful. He would treat us like that, you see. You can imagine. You get a letter from Prabhupada, there's the return address, you know, Sri Dandi Goswami, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, and then it says His Grace Sriman, so such and such, Das, such and such. Just a little aside, a little nectarian aside, but yeah, Prabhupada was his books. Anything you read in his books, you can take as a personal instruction to you. So you not only have your param, your guru's orders, you have your param guru's orders as well. So you can say, "Oh, I haven't. Here's an instruction. Prabhupada has given an instruction, and I'm in his sampradaya. So this is by the mercy of my spiritual master. It's coming through my spiritual master, from Prabhupada through my spiritual master to me. This instruction. Anything else?
When is one ready for initiation?
Hmm.
When is one ready for initiation?
When is one devotee ready for initiation?
Mm. When you can realize that this material world is a sinking ship. That's like saying, when is it time to get in the lifeboat? Let's say you're on the Titanic and it hits the iceberg. When is the time to get on the lifeboat? Right now, immediately? Or let me go for one more dance in the ballroom, because the orchestra is playing a really good tune down there in the ballroom, and surely this ship wouldn't sink. They said that it was an unsinkable ship, so there's really nothing to worry about. Even though we hit a iceberg, I mean, I'm just going to go up for another dance in the ballroom and not really worry about it. It's a sink-proof ship. When is the time to go for the lifeboat? Right now? Yeah. So the time to get initiated is right now, actually. Right now. When one realizes that I have no shelter in this material world, it's a sinking ship, then I should immediately get initiated. I remember I had that desire to immediately get initiated, but then I had to wait 6 months. After I realized that Prabhupada was my eternal spiritual master, and I had no business for all of eternity except to love him and serve him. When I realized that, then I had to wait for 6 months. And what really killed me was a few other boys had joined a few weeks before me, and we went to California from Texas, and they all got initiated. I was just a few weeks short, and they all got initiated. Well, I had to just sit there and watch the yajna. But by Krishna's grace, by Prabhupada's grace, shortly after that, we got back from the Ratha Yatra, and then a few weeks later, the letter came in the mail from Prabhupada, accepting me as his disciple. So actually, one should be very eager to get initiated as soon as possible. Understanding that this material world is a sinking ship, one should be intensely desiring to be initiated as soon as possible. That's the proper move. Okay? All right, any other questions? Yeah.
Can one still aspire for initiation and if we are having material desires?
Can one aspire for initiation when we still have material desires?
Well, I think if you had to wait until you're a pure devotee, you probably would never get initiated. Initiation means being admitted into the hospital. It doesn't mean you're a healthy man. It means you understand I'm in a diseased state. I have a fatal disease called a material body. And I need to get in that hospital as soon as possible. I'm desperate to be admitted to that hospital. If you had to wait to become healthy before you went to the hospital, you would never be able to go. Now, obviously, you have to prove that you're capable of taking the treatment which is given in the hospital.
You can surrender yourself to the doctor. You see, no illicit sex, no meeting, no intoxication, no gambling, at least 16 rounds a day. When Prabhupada was here, the standard was you had to do that for 6 months. If you could do that for 6 months, immediately you'd be recommended for initiation. That was the standard. In the early days, they could just walk in off the street and be initiated. The early days. When they probably were just trying to get things moving, get things rolling. But then once they became a little established, then it became solidly established, 6 months of no illicit sex, no meeting, no intoxication, no gambling, at least 16 rounds. So if you're able to follow the regulative principles and chant 16 rounds, you are qualified. Even if you still have material desires sitting in your heart, if you're not acting on them, if you are following the rules and regulations, then you're qualified. It's not that the material desires will go away immediately. Even if you're strictly following the rules and regulations and chanting 16 rounds, the material desires will still be hovering there, saying, come on, gratify me, gratify me. The senses will still be going, gratify me, gratify me, gratify me. But if you're fixed in the regulated principles and chanting, you'll say, nope, 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 get out of here, nope. You see? Anything else? Everybody's convinced that Krishna is God?
Yes.
And that you're his eternal servant, or you still have some doubt? Maybe. Maybe Krishna is God. I don't know, maybe it's me. Maybe I'm God, but you know, maybe Krishna is God, maybe I'm God. Well, I don't know. Anybody, that's it? Finished? Okay.
Is it better for a lady to get initiated after marriage? Is it better for a lady to get initiated after marriage so that they have...
Is it better after marriage or before marriage to get initiated? Well, Prabhupada's system was first initiation and then marriage. For the boys and girls who came together to this movement as boyfriend and girlfriend, he would do the initiation yajna first and then he would marry them. And as far as someone who's not in that position, just coming from a traditional, you know, Hindu family, were raised in a very nice protected way, is it better for such a girl to first get married or to get initiated? Actually, initiation is more important than marriage because initiation is eternal and marriage is just for one lifetime. Now, some I know one of my godbrothers, he won't initiate a woman unless she's married. That's for practical reasons because an unmarried, in Indian culture right now, if the girl is not married and she gets initiated, her family members don't understand the importance of her being married to an ISKCON devotee, and they'll want her to be buried on the basis of caste. And it becomes a very difficult situation. She wants to be a devotee, but they're forcing her to marry a non-devotee, maybe even a meat eater. And so I know one godbrother, he won't initiate a woman unless she's married first. Because once she's married, then that problem is already solved. And if she's married and following regulative principles, then she's in a situation where she can maintain it. But if a girl gets initiated and then married to not someone who's not a devotee, it makes it difficult for her to keep her initiation vows. Of course, in the Western culture, there's no such thing as caste consciousness for marriage. You just marry whoever you want in Australia and in the U.S. That's the Western culture. So that's not an issue so much. That's not really an issue because you marry whoever you want. It's considered free, open field here, you know, in the Western countries. But in Indian culture, Hindu culture, it can be a problem. If a girl is in a non-devotee family and she wants to be a devotee and the parents are forcing her, it's practically like the whole family like commits suicide if she doesn't marry some of the same caste. I mean, it's very heavy.
I deal with it all the time in my correspondence with a girl who wants to be a devotee, and, but the parents wanted to marry a non-devotee, or a boy, or vice versa. Worked both ways. So yeah, that. So, but in principle, initiation is first, always first. It's more important. Of course, in traditional Vedic culture, the girl wouldn't even be initiated except when her husband got initiated. You know, it was like a package deal. She would take shelter of her husband, and then she would become a disciple when the husband became the disciple. But that's not. We're not in that era right now. We don't have such a wonderful culture where all the men are becoming disciples. We don't have such a situation. Formerly, the men were spiritually strong. The men in general were spiritually strong, and the ladies were spiritually weak. And their marriage, their devotion to their husband helped them to become a devotee, because their husband is a devotee. But now, we don't have such a culture. Now we see oftentimes the women are more spiritually strong than the men. So now the best principle is the girl should just get initiated. That's more important than her marriage. She should get initiated. And then we can look for a Krishna conscious husband for the girl. That's the best thing. Because she should be firmly committed to these principles before entering marriage, because many, it's as a weakness in our society now. Many householders are having illicit sex. Prabhupada clearly states, it's in his Bhagavad Gita purport, it's in many lectures, it's clearly stated that within marriage, sex is only for procreation once in a month. And beyond that, it's strict brahmachari. But many devotees in our society are not following this. Many householders are deviating from Srila Prabhupada. So that's why initiation vows are more important than marriage, you see. So we're going to understand this is more important. To strictly follow my initiation vows is more important than any idea of marriage duty. Marriage duty is accepted and to help one become situated in one's initiation vows, not that it's some other principle that you can give up your initiation vows, that satisfying my husband's sexual desires is more important than satisfying my initiation vow. So initiation is more important. It's primary. Marriage is secondary. Anything else? Yeah.
Thank you for the nice class. The chapters before this we read were King Prithu was born from the body, by churning the body of King Vena.
Mm.
But we also see that life comes from life. So how do a life came from a dead body by churning it?
Yes. Well, even everyone actually comes from the semina of a male. The spirit soul takes birth in every man and every woman. Every spirit soul who takes a material body, well, in the humans especially, I mean, there are different species that have different means of procreation. But certainly amongst the human beings, the beasts, and very commonly, the soul will enter the semina of the male, and then, because the spirit soul is present in those in those material chemicals, through nature's arrangement, he entering in the womb of the mother, then he will develop the body, the material body. So the principle remains the same, whether it's a special arrangement made by the sadhus, or it's nature's normal way of male semina combining with the female fluids. Whichever, it's a physical process in either case. And it only works when there's a spirit soul present who is ordained to get a material body. So these sages have supernatural powers that they can do things, they can manipulate the material energies. The great yogis also have these powers.
They can manipulate the material energy. Even there was one yogi who was able to get, he was able to produce human beings out of palm trees. So it's not that he manufactured the soul, it's just the soul appeared in that material arrangement. So the spirit soul, ordained by higher authorities within the universe, and ultimately by the Supreme Personality of God and Himself, the spirit soul manifested in that material arrangement that was made by churning the body of Vena. So what specifically it did, it took place in that churning, whether they extracted his semina or how it happened, we don't know. The details aren't given. But whether in a normal birth, it's a physical thing also. But so it's one physical arrangement or a different physical arrangement. When the higher authorities ordain a jiva to appear within that physical arrangement, then the jiva can take his birth in this way. Questions, Mark? Yeah.
Previous sloka, and even in Bhagavad Gita, it's mentioned
patriarchs.
Yeah.
What, okay. Can you please explain what that means?
Well, the word, in the word father, it's like the word, it's related etymologically related to the word father. Patriarchs, it means the forefathers. Yeah. Refers to great forefathers. Huh?
Patriarchs are forefathers and pachetas are different. Pachetas are different. Pachetas. Prachetas are different. They are sons of Brahmaji. And patriarchs are different. And they were also called patriarchs because they propagated the material world.
Yeah. I'm just looking at how it appeared in the previous verse. I'm not seeing it. Maybe it's in the purport. Prachetas were ordered to marry and get children. I don't see patriarch specifically mentioned in the previous verse. Maybe it's in the purport or in the word for word.
Yeah,
I meant the prachetas. Prachetas. Oh, that's different than patriarchs. These prachetas means the sons of Prachinabarhi. That's the meaning. Yeah. Anything else? Everyone satisfied now? Ready to accept the order of your spiritual master as your life and soul? Is even more important than going back to Godhead? Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.